Okay, there was a very holy and righteous Jew by the name of Rabbi Blumenkrantz who passed away over a decade ago, but he left his mark in many, many ways. One of them was that every year he published a Pesach digest with a variety of halachos and practical things to know heading into Pesach. This digest accomplished a number of things. First thing it accomplished is it brought a new genre that overall that genre makes life easier for us. I mean, the idea of product lists for Pesach in English, where someone has done all the research, every time you go on your OU app or CRC app to figure out what you can and cannot buy, we are indebted to Rabbi Blumenkrantz for that. The second thing that it accomplished was that it introduced tons of chumras in Hilchos Pesach that a generation of people assumed was actually mainstream, because he was the only show in town. He was the only one producing. So he certainly was a major Talmud Chacham and had every right to every shita that he had, but it doesn't mean that that was the mainstream shita that everybody else held, and people just naturally assumed it was. And the third thing it accomplished was that it provided him with a platform for his shitos on non-Pesach-related issues as well. Since all of Klal Yisrael relied on that book for their Pesach-related questions, so they got he was able to stick in what he thought about electric shavers and, you know, all other sorts of contemporary issues. One of those issues, what we're going to talk about today, is this, a styrofoam cup. So Rabbi Blumenkrantz held that styrofoam cups are not kosher. You might ask, but who will eat a styrofoam cup? No, it's not about eating the styrofoam cup. It is about using a styrofoam cup. Now, what could the issue be with using a styrofoam cup? In the recently published Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 7, Rabbi J. David Bleich has a nice article on this topic, and he takes Rabbi Blumenkrantz's concerns very seriously, and he addresses them as follows. What is the issue? Well, the issue is that styrofoam cups are made, the metzius is, they're made with thousands of small polymer beads that are put into a cup-shaped mold, and then steam expands the beads and it forms a cup. So that alone is not a problem. Those polymer beads are not at all a kashrus issue. Thing is, though, it would be very difficult to remove these now expanded beads from the mold if not for a mixture of zinc oxide and stearic acid, which is added as a release agent to let it come out of the mold more smoothly. The stearic acid is the problem, because while it can be derived from vegetable sources, it's not. It's usually not derived from vegetable sources, and therefore it can pose a kashrus problem. Now, how much of this is stearic acid and how much of this is polymer beads? Approximately 499/500ths of this is polymer beads, and 1/500th of it, at most, is stearic acid. Meaning very, very little of it is actually the non-kosher product. But be that as it may, you don't want to have something non-kosher go into your mouth, right? So what are the tzadim lahakel? So tzad lahakel number one might be that the stearic acid has no taste, no flavor whatsoever. The Rama writes in Yerideas and Pezayin Sefiud, when he talks about the Or HaKeva, he says that once something becomes like Eitz Bialma, it becomes a flavorless piece of wood, it does not pose a kashrus problem. A second tzad lahakel is that it's certainly batel, right? The stearic acid, it's 1/500, it's way more than shishim. However, one may argue that bittul may not apply over here, because bittul maybe only applies when it's food in another food, but not when it's a food in a non-edible, meaning the actual beads are not edible. They are not a food at all. The logic of bittul might be that the taste of the smaller thing is overwhelmed by the taste of the larger thing, of that which has the greater volume. If there is no taste to that which has the greater volume, because it's not a food at all, well then maybe bittul can't work. However, Rabbi Bleich argues that more likely, the idea of bittul is that a smaller food is dispersed in a larger volume, so in such a way where it's not even detectable. Nothing to do with the flavor of the larger food, just the fact that it so disperses the smaller food that you cannot detect the flavor at all, in which case a food would be able to be batel even in a non-food. A third tzad lahakel that's suggested is that there is a Mishnah Maseches Trumos Perikir Aleph, Mishnah Vav, where the Mishnah talks about, if let's say I have kelim that had truma in them, and I want to use those same kelim to store chulin. I happen to not be a kohen, so I'm not allowed to eat truma. And I want to store chulin in those kelim. So the Mishnah says, even though there may be residue of the truma attached to the wall of the kli, it's okay, you could just rinse it out and it's fine, even though there may still be residue of truma there. So some wanted to suggest, so you see that apparently slight residue in a kli is not going to be a problem. However, it seems that that is not at all a viable maramakom for our discussion. The Rash in Maseches Trumos explains that that was a kula specifically for truma. The Tosfos B'Kiv Eger, in the name of the Rashba, says not just a kula specifically for truma, it's dafka talking about truma midrabanan over there. It's not even talking about truma midaraisa. Rabbi Kiv Eger quotes from Tosfos and from the Rashbam that the case was that the Yisrael had not yet given the truma to the Kohen. So if I'm a Yisrael and I have a barrel full of truma wine, don't I realize that when I'm going to pour that wine into the Kohen's kli, there's going to be some wine left adhering to the walls of my kli? So when I take my barrel of wine and I say, this is here by truma, what I really mean is, most of this is here by truma. But whatever is going to adhere to the walls is in fact not truma. So that really has very little to... So that's the real heter over there, is that it's not even truma at all. So it really has very little to do with our case, and therefore is not a viable heter. A fourth possible kula that Rabbi Bleich suggests is the comment, the famous comment of the Aruch HaShulchan in Siman Pei Dalet Sif Lamed Vav, where the Aruch HaShulchan says that Yesh Misha Kosav B'Shem Chachmei Ateva, that there are scientists that say that if you put just about anything under a microscope, you will see living organisms. So how are we allowed to eat anything? There's always living organisms. Isn't it a problem of eating shrutzim when we breathe, when we drink water, when we anything? So the Aruch HaShulchan says that it's important to know, Ha'emesu delo asra Torah b'ma she'ena ayin sholetes bo. The Torah does not asr that which the human eye cannot see. Delo nitna Torah l'malachim. Dim lokein hare kama me'achokrim kasu shagam kola avir hu male bruim dakim and adakim. Air is full of living tiny organisms, so a person wouldn't be able to open his mouth and breathe, and that's ridiculous. The halacha only recognizes that which the eye can recognize in good light and whatever else, but that which the eye is able to recognize. So Rabbi Bleich suggests that the coating cannot be detected by any of the five senses. You cannot find that stearic acid stuck to the styrofoam cup at all. And maybe as something that's undetectable, by definition, it's insignificant. Now, what this already addresses is not so much the stearic acid that's in the beads, that's in the mixture of the beads itself, but that the stearic acid is, part of it is not absorbed by the beads and actually coats the interior surface of the cup. So what do we do with that? Now, certainly, when you put coffee into this cup, whatever stearic acid is on the minuscule amount is coating the cup is automatically batel, right? It's batel in way more than shishim in whatever liquid you put in here. But there is a problem. One is not allowed to be mevatel iser lechatchila. So if I know that there's a minuscule amount of iser in here, when I pour a coffee in here, aren't I violating ein mevatel iser lechatchila, that I'm actively making bittel happen? So to this he suggests, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yardayasim and Saditasiv Zayin, that the reason ein mevatel iser lechatchila is that out of a concern that a person might think he's being mevatel the iser, but mess up the math in his head and do it in a way where it's not actually being mevatel the iser. But, says the Shulchan Aruch explicitly, if you have a type of kli that has some minor blia or some minor amount of iser, where no matter what you put in that kli, it's always going to be enough to be batel. So there's no concern that you might mess up the cheshbon, because there's such a minuscule amount of iser that no matter what you use it for, it's always going to be batel. Then there's no problem of a mevatlin iser lechatchila. The problem with that is that not everyone agrees with the Shulchan Aruch. The Taz and Sadi Tesev Katan Tezvav, the Shach and Kufchav Besev Katan Gimel, disagree with the Shulchan Aruch. The Taz allows it for blios, but over here we're not talking about something that's balua, we're talking about whatever's left on the actual surface of the kli. The other Tzad Lahakel is the Ramah and Yardeas and Pei Dalet Sif Yud Gimel, quotes from a Trumas Adeshen, discussing heating a honeycomb that has pieces of shratzim in it, that when there is no kavana levatel, and you don't even realize that you are being mevatel something, that's not called a mevatel nisa l'chadchila. You're not intending to be a mevatel, you don't even realize you're being mevatel. It's not like you're taking a drop of milk and dropping it in your chicken soup, knowing that you're being mevatel the milk in the chicken soup. You don't even know, stearic acid, I would have asked you, you know, 10 minutes ago, what stearic acid, or 10 minutes and 30 seconds ago, what stearic acid is, you would have said, I don't presume what level of knowledge you have. You would have known, I have no idea. You know, you wouldn't have known, you certainly wouldn't have known that it's there on the cup and that you're trying to be mevatel it. Question is whether that works, that Ramo works for this case. The Taz holds that that's only true if there's no other way to access the food, like by a honeycomb. Over here, there are other ways to have coffee. You can use paper cups. You don't necessarily have to use a styrofoam cup. Rabbi Blumkrantz of Chana Levracha actually has a list of companies of styrofoam cups that don't use stearic acid or use some sort of kosher stearic acid. The other problem is with Kivega writes in Simenai and Zayin and Shuva that the Chuma Sedeshin is only making when the bittel is necessary in order to prepare the food, like the honey, but not when the food is already prepared and you're just trying to be mevatel an iser in it. And he says the entire case of the Chuma Sedeshin is only when there's a suffix whether there's an iser there. Over here, we know that there's a stearic acid here and therefore should be might be a problem. But given all of that, I think the tzdadim lahakel are significant enough, especially considering that it may only be a suffix if you don't, I don't know that we're achrayi to call every styrofoam cup company and figure out, what exactly their policies are, what exactly the way they make the cups are. The final word, though, Rabbi Bleich points out, is that this shail is quickly becoming irrelevant. Because in a growing number of cities, styrofoam cups are becoming illegal to use. Because it gets lodged in the intestines of marine animals and kills them, and it becomes a sponge for contaminants and pollutants. So it's, the environmentalists have won, and styrofoam cups are becoming, so other than here in Yeshiva, styrofoam cups are becoming less and less commonly found, and therefore, Rabbi Blumenkranz of Chana Levracha, I'm sure, is looking down from Shemayim and smiling that in the end of the day, he won. Okay.